Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. 908. Brooke Laser joins us in the studio now. It's nice to meet this young lady who is a graduate of Mount Carmel Academy. What's that? Oh, we've got to get the microphone ready. We don't have. We're Brooke, this is not TV. We're pretty bare bones operation here. You understand what I'm saying? You're on your own.
You are on your own.
Survival of the fittest. So good luck to you.
We know that feeling.
Let's talk about you real quick. Mount Carmel graduate, and you went to Mississippi State. Is that right?
Yes, you've got it.
And then decided to become a meteorologist. That's why you went to Mississippi State. Then worked at a TV station. Now you're at Channel 4. What made you decide that you wanted to be a weather person? Because I don't envy what you all do, because you're predicting the future is what you're doing, and a lot of people are basing a lot of stuff based on your predictions, and they hold you responsible for it, right?
They do, without a doubt. We get a lot of that flack for potentially being wrong and still having a job, but, you know, we'll take it. It's a great career. But, of course, Katrina was my inspiration on studying
it. Was it really?
Yeah, born and raised here. I was only 10 when the storm hit, believe it or not. So at that time, my father was running his business and under immense stress because of the storm and keeping his firm alive and everyone employed, and it just had a big impact. So I really knew then I wanted to study this and followed it to college, and have been so fortunate for a dream come true of returning home and serving New Orleans, especially during Ida.
That had to be kind of weird when, I'm trying to think, which was it? I get the names confused. What did we have when we stayed here, Tim? What was it when we stayed overnight?
Ida,
was that it?
Francine.
I don't know. They name them all. They need to quit naming them repeatedly, because we've been through like three Ivans or whatever it is. What was the latest one that hit us this summer?
Francine,
okay.
Yes.
But it had to have been kind of odd for you to be on TV talking about Francine and referencing Katrina when that was what caused you to go into the weather, right?
Yeah, you know, it's full circle. And Katrina has been a big date for me in my career, because I interviewed for my first position in New Orleans on the anniversary, and then I was able to make an announcement on coming to WWL on the anniversary. So I had decided 16 years prior to being able to serve during Ida that I wanted to study weather, and then that dream became a reality, if you will. So it really has been an important date.
And you worked in Augusta, Georgia, or close to there? What is
your
story? I did.
Yes. Augusta was my first market out of college, and I had such an incredible experience there. It was definitely my favorite market other than New Orleans, which is home. And I'm fortunate for usually going back in April, so I'm very thankful for that. But have been feeling for them coming off of Helene. They have really experienced so much devastation, and the storm really came as a shock there so far inland. So I've been keeping up with all my friends that are still recovering and just got power back within the last 48 hours.
When you say Augusta, is your dad a golfer?
My father is a golfer. My grandfather was a bigger golfer in New Orleans, just in his pastime. But I'm not. I'm a great spectator.
I'm just saying this. Whenever you say Augusta, the point of reference becomes Augusta National, right?
For most people.
Did you spend some time there or not?
Yes, I did. When I worked there, I was fortunate to do a little bit of forecasting for the Masters. And then,
really?
Yeah, I've gone back each April since 2017, which has been amazing. It's certainly an experience that I think...
Going back to do what?
Just to be a patron at the Masters.
Oh, okay.
That everyone should take if they ever get the opportunity to experience it.
You really can't enjoy the golf course on television like you can if you see it, right? With the rises and the elevations and the hills and the flowers and so forth.
Oh, my goodness. The elevation is wild. This past year, after Sunday, my ankles were swollen, which is unusual, but you walk so much and you're walking uphill, and it is a lot of physical exercise just to go and see the golfers play. So, yes.
How many people have in your lifetime said, hey, Brooke, can you get me on Augusta?
Oh, my goodness. So
a lot.
Yes, a lot. But I wish I had those powers. I do not have them by any means. Have you ever been there, Tommy?
No, I'd just like to ask one more time. Can you get me on Augusta? No, but I'd love to go. Let's talk about, because the reason I wanted to have you on, we were trying to look for somebody who could take us through the path of Helene and how it could cause so much damage inland, because I'd been to Biltmore in North Carolina and Asheville, and I'm trying to, in my mind, figure out, well, how can a hurricane cause that much damage? So what I thought it might be interesting to do is take us from the time Helene hit in Florida, take us through that, and then from there we'll morph into Milton. And what, well, I'll tell you what, before we get to the places outside of Florida, let's start with Helene and Milton and look at where Milton's scheduled to hit and what areas were impacted by Helene and where they could be getting the double whammy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just so tough to fathom, you know, waking up this morning and seeing all the coverage of the evacuations and the traffic. It's such a familiar feeling here, and you can't help but just have goosebumps, especially thinking about those debris piles that are still on the road and could become even further in terms of, you know, that destruction or
wind's going to whip all it would be like, for example, and we had the scare with Rita here. I don't know where you were, but what your Katrina story is, but they had all that debris piled up on West End, and it would be similar or akin, I guess, to a storm coming in and blowing that all over.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Just additional trajectories and lofted debris to become more of a problem. So I am just feeling for everybody down there, but I guess we'll go back with the timeline for Helene when the initial landfall happened. It was late on September 26th, right? And overnight landfalls are tough because it's dark. So it's all the more scary in that you can't exactly see what's happening. And I'm sure a lot of people here have experienced that before as well. But it essentially worked its way beyond the Big Bend and then maintained such intensity and strength all the way into, as a lot of people know, Georgia and South Carolina. And Augusta was, you know, well inland and took the direct eyewall hit, which was not exactly forecasted. So that community was very surprised to experience everything they did go through. And that, of course, adds to it so much as well. I think you had the same situation in North Carolina. You know, we're so fortunate here that we know what a hurricane is like. We know how to prepare. And more often than not, we leave because there's just no reason to stay and experience all the negativity on the back end without any resources. But to go through it without any preparation, even simply water, gas, you know, things along those lines, that's really unimaginable on the backside, especially when you have all these trees down and then the power lines come down and you have gas leaks and the list goes on. But then the flooding on top in North Carolina is just so tough to fathom. And I'm sure you feel the same way, Tommy. I've been talking with my friends in Augusta and they'll describe the refrigerator smell or, you know, the flood water smell from a couple of my friends up in Asheville. And you can still smell those same scents when you hear somebody say it, if you did go through that during Katrina. So it is just a tough experience all around.
I think that's why it resonates so much with us here, because we did go through it. We do see it on TV and we understand, like you're talking about, even the refrigerator smells or the debris piles, what it is they're going through. So when it comes to Helene, where did it land in Florida and how does that compare and contrast with where Milton is headed?
So two somewhat different areas, Big Bend region as opposed to Tampa. And yes, the map is always a great thing. But as it continued to move inland, it went in a very different direction than Milton will go. So Tampa, of course, did experience a good bit of surge with this past storm, somewhere between, I want to say, 6 and 8 feet, whereas the forecast here is between 10 and 15. So that is a very significant difference. But as this one moved inland, Helene continued up through Georgia and then into the Carolinas. And you had a couple of different factors contributing to the overall damage assessment. A lot of times with the National Weather Service assessments, we don't always confirm exactly what happened until after the fact. And it comes from looking at all the damage and then sort of coming up with a wind speed or a further assessment of, you know, maybe a tornado has come through here, or we had an eyewall scenario where it was a mesocyclone. So in those initial days right after the storm, we don't always have confirmation on the exact impact until the cleanup effort is really complete. But one thing that I looked into significantly with Georgia and the Carolinas was the elevation and how that contributed to such a wild scenario unfolding. And of course, these tropical systems are so large scale, right? But The rainfall was the primary issue in the Carolinas, not only during the storm, but also the events that happened before the storm came through. So you already had saturated ground, you already had swollen rivers, and then you have this coming on top, dumping another 30 inches of rain in the Asheville area. And those rivers start to swell, and then you have the terrain also
30
adding.
Inches of rain?
Yes, 30 inches of rain. A little more than that, actually.
In what, maybe a day or two?
In about 3 days.
Wow.
So that's, of course, a slightly larger timeline, but that's more than they would traditionally see for the month of September as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So just an unbelievable amount of moisture in the atmosphere and on the ground. And there's something called orographic lifting, which is this concept where in the hills and the mountains, air is forced to rise and it cools a little more quickly. That causes the water vapor to then condense and additional precipitation forms. So that was combining with Helene's impact, and all of that moisture was essentially pooling in the valleys, squeezing the moisture out of the atmosphere. You had it running through the valleys, in the rivers and the streams, basically. So that's what really led to that extreme flood scenario in the Carolinas. And it's just not something they typically experience. I mean, you don't usually have hurricanes that far inland, but it really is so tough to know what a storm is going to do once it makes landfall. And I learned that during Ida because I hadn't personally experienced a hurricane before. I'd always evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch them as a meteorologist when they're in the water and you know all the different areas to target, what to look for factor-wise, the water temperature, your dry air or shear that can break a storm up. But once it gets inland and it sort of loses that fuel source, it's very tough to navigate exactly what the storm's going to do because it sort of just has a mind of its own. So I think you had sort of the perfect storm come together for this particular scenario to evolve. But it definitely is a reminder as a meteorologist of how important the forecast is for all areas that could potentially experience these impacts, because it is just such a better experience when you're prepared, of course.
I guess it's speculation, but would this have been better had it come in from the Atlantic, say through Norfolk, than the way it did, or that's just no way to tell?
Better in what way?
Well,
less impact?
Less impact, yeah.
You know, I think it probably would have been, because the path it took, of course, affected the areas it affected in that it went right over those locations. Mm-hmm. But I think it just depends on the particular place and a lot of factors beyond the storm itself. With Tampa, you know, I was researching their preparation efforts, and I remember during Hurricane Ian, which was back in 2022, which ended up a little bit further south of the Tampa area, they had put a preparation at Tampa General, the hospital, for example, in place with
that wall.
Yeah,
I saw that.
15-foot flood wall. And, you know, that is something that I think we'd benefit greatly from here.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it's something that we've ever thought about as a resource. But of course, that would prevent the experience like you had at Baptist during Katrina, mm-hmm. more than likely with all the flooding. So they certainly have a lot of preparations that they have used time and time again. And that flood wall worked during Helene, and it really did save them in a sense. But of course, the surge forecast was not as significant as this one will be. So the forecast is 15 feet. The flood wall is 15 feet. So that is probably going to be enough, hopefully. But when you fathom 15 feet of water, mm-hmm. it really is unimaginable.
Let me take a break. We're going to pick it up when we come back. And I've lived here all my life, except for maybe about a year in Vegas where I worked. And and that's, you know, Vegas in a valley. So there are some ups and downs, nowhere near like Augusta, Georgia. And having been to Asheville, the reason I wanted to have you in, my mind, I just can't wrap it around a mountainous area like that flooding. I just
right.
can't imagine how in the world could, because it's always downhill from there, how could anything flood? But I guess with 30 inches of rain, the rivers get swollen, and then Asheville floods.
Yeah.
Have you been to Biltmore or not?
I have.
Yeah,
amazing. It's beautiful.
My house in Belcher is bigger than that.
Oh, my goodness.
It really is.
Well,
it's amazing.
You'll have to have me over.
The fireplace alone, bigger than that.
All
right, 9:22, we'll take a break. Brooke Laser is our guest. That's how you pronounce it, Laser, right?
Yeah, like right. a beam.
And a new meteorologist over at WWR Louisiana, worked in Augusta, Georgia. So we're talking about the impacts of Helene, and then we'll get back and talk about Milton as well and Tampa Bay and the storm surge and how just a couple of miles can make all the difference as to whether water gets pushed into Tampa or out. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 9:28. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend, our newest, bestest weather friend, Brooke Laser, WWL TV meteorologist. Alexandra Cranford had her baby, so you're an aunt
yes.
now, right?
Oh my goodness, I wouldn't say that. I could not get over how precious he is,
it's
though.
The fraternity of weather people that makes you an aunt. Your aunt Brooke.
I'll take it. So I can't wait to meet him.
So let's talk about Milton and going into Florida, and as opposed to Helene and Tampa Bay, because it all, you talk about 10 to 15 feet of storm surge. The way these things are designed, the hurricanes, or at least the way they develop, it depends on, 10 miles can make a hell of a difference as to whether it pushes water into the bay or out of Tampa Bay, right?
Yes, absolutely. And they've been really fortunate for essentially dodging the last few threats each time. So that 20-mile difference is a huge difference in terms of the eventual impact. And it seems like the storm has been trending a little bit further right of the initial forecast track, which is bringing it right into the bay. So if that does verify, then this will certainly be something they haven't seen in over 100 years. But it is wild to think about the Bucks being here this week as well, having relocated.
What about the composition of the storm itself? We hear about Category 5 mm-hmm. and barometric pressure, and I never did quite understand. Matter of fact, you know what? If y'all have any questions, 504-260-1870, and we'll pass them along to Brooke about the hurricanes. And, you know, a lot of us go back to remembering Nash as a kid, not you.
Of course.
Certainly you're too young for that. But and they'd give us the hurricane maps, and we'd draw the eye of the hurricane. And by the time you tried to get it even, you covered the whole Gulf with the storm. But this storm does take up a lot of the Gulf, right?
Oh, yeah, it does. I have a similar map. I can't quite draw on it, but it has magnetic tacks that you move.
Yeah.
Yes. So I use it almost every day. It was my grandfather's. But every day during hurricane season, of course. But yes.
Yeah, because if you did it in March, it would just be weird.
It would. But yeah, this one's been really interesting to watch. And on Monday, as we were seeing it so rapidly intensify, basically from a tropical storm to Category 5 in 24 hours, I was looking at the barometric pressure, as you just mentioned, Tommy, and a lot of people don't necessarily know what that means for a storm.
That
but
would be me. I don't understand. My mom used to always say, when the pressure drops, it's bad, but I don't know why or what that means.
Right. So when the pressure is dropping, the storm's intensifying. And this storm actually got down to just 2 millibars higher than Rita. And Rita has the record for the lowest pressure ever before in the Gulf of Mexico. So it did start to rise again, basically hit 897 millibars. The standing record is 895. And then it started to rise again back into the 900s as we approached Monday night. But this thankfully had some dry air to encounter. So that's why you saw the winds drop off a bit starting Monday. And they've stayed in that Category 4 range since. But now the forecast for landfall is back up to Category 4 intensity. So that's why, as meteorologists, we always say, don't focus on the category. Of course, that's just accounting wind speed. And it is sort of wild that that's our measurement, if you will, and it only factors one impact into the equation, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. But with this storm surge is really going to be the biggest concern. And of course, I mean, you think about the weight of water and you think about what's in the water. I mean, during Ida, I remember our reporters were coming back with the wildest content after the storm. We had a reporter that broke the news about the individual in Slidell that was drug away by an alligator. Mm-hmm. There was an alligator uptown that ended up in a dumpster. You know, you think about the swamp that rushes into our area during these storms. Well, Florida, the gators are very similar. You know, you've got wildlife in the water. You've got debris. Again, we're talking about leftover from Helene that gets picked up and starts to flood in. You've got furniture from inside. You've got cars at times. It's just unimaginable to think about, really. And I remember also during Ida, I didn't expect this, but when I went to check on my parents' home, which was completely fine after Ida, I mentally went back to being on my grandmother's front steps in Lakeview during mm-hmm. Katrina. And it was like the reverse effect because, of course, her home was not okay then mm-hmm. and my parents was. But my dad had asked me to go up into the attic and check for leaks. And I got up there and it was so hot and it was so dark. And all I could think about were the people in Lafitte that we'd covered experiencing rising water the night before during Ida. And I can't imagine being in that situation where it's dark, water's rising. You don't have access to information or any resources to call for help. And what you're left to make a decision on, you know? So that's why I, as a meteorologist, always encourage people to leave if they have the ability, because it's just not worth staying, in my opinion. I know a lot of people have always stayed and like to ride these storms out, but of course I have to stay. I wouldn't if I didn't have to, you know?
Yeah, same here. And you know, we got calls during Katrina from people that were in attics, and there was a lot of misinformation or disinformation. People didn't know exactly what was going on. But the thought I had, Brooke, was having been in an attic in the summertime, is that one thing that gets lost, and you just brought it up, is how incredibly hot it is in there and dark after the power goes out, presuming you had lights up there to begin with, and how miserable that must be.
Yes.
What about Disney World and Milton? And well, because so many of us here have made the pilgrimage with kids to Disney World and Magic Kingdom, what kind of damage are they likely to look at from Milton?
Yeah, you know, it's wild to think about. They're going to definitely see at least a Category 2 there, without a doubt. And I know Disney World is closed, which is rare. I feel like they don't do that unless they basically have a hurricane impact coming or some type of additional weather scenario. But nonetheless, they will be experiencing pretty significant impacts. I'm sure they'll be able to get back open as quickly as possible, but I need to look into the process for boarding up Magic Kingdom, as we just talked about, mm-hmm. because I'm sure it's an extensive effort. And I did see that Tampa's airport was closing yesterday morning and Orlando's was closing this morning. So I'm sure that adds to some of the difficulty. I've had a couple friends that were there message me within the last few days about their plan to reroute and travel differently. But I think everyone that is there has been paying close attention to this for at least the last few days.
Might seem trivial, but for people that are fans of Augusta, do you know how badly the golf course was damaged by Helene?
You know, I was talking about that last night, and there hasn't been a whole lot of information on it. I do know the National donated $5 million to Augusta itself for the ability to recover, which is nice, of course, but they do a pretty good job of keeping everything sealed up there in terms of
all
the logistics.
It's not a public course. You don't just walk on and pay a green fee and play. They're kind of exclusive with what they let out.
They are. Yeah. I will say the hill, which is the neighborhood or the area where Augusta National is located, was really badly damaged in comparison on other parts of the town. So North Augusta is actually in South Carolina, and that is across the Savannah River. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Augusta, Georgia is on the other side. So it's really interesting. The town sits on the state line. And the hill area was far more impacted than North Augusta was. And I think the elevation, again, had a little bit to do with that. As you mentioned, the course is very hilly, and the hill is too. That's why it's called the hill. But they just had so much more wind damage there, and there are so many trees there. And we have so many trees here. But if you think about the North Shore and all the pine trees there, it's sort of a similar feel when you're driving around the Augusta area. And I happened to be at the tournament last year, 2023, when the two trees fell. Do you remember hearing about that? It was a wild experience because when you're on the course, you're not allowed to have your phone. So you're just sort of reverting in time. And it's great because you have to be present. And that's what makes the experience so special. But when those trees fell, everybody started to sort of have panic rush over them, and you realize that no one's exempt from the human experience. So the golfers started to run, the caddies were running, and all the patrons were looking around with the additional trees swaying as well, having to sort of rush off the course. And you can't call an Uber, you know, you have to have either parked or you catch a cab, like back in the day. So all that being said, just from that one experience of, it was an outflow boundary with a 60 mile per hour wind, and those two trees coming down, I can only imagine when they were sustaining 100 mile per hour winds, wow, what the course must look like. But I can guarantee you it will be picked up and back to perfection.
Pristine.
Soon. Yeah. Yes.
I will take a break, pick it up, we come back. Somebody texted in, they don't understand what barometric pressure is, so perhaps you could explain that. Somebody else wants to know about how high are the walls of a hurricane. Because
okay,
I saw the footage yesterday of the Hurricane Hunters going in. I don't know if you saw that or not, and they got jostled around. And they think I'm crazy around here because I would love to go on a ride with a Hurricane Hunter. Would you like to do
that? Oh my gosh, that's my dream.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I think it'd be fun.
It is my dream. We'll see one day, I hope, that happens.
All right, 938, 22 till 10, traffic now, WWL. All right, 945, spending an hour with Brooke Laser talking about hurricanes and Milton and Helene and how it caused so much damage. And we understand now that what happened in North Carolina was 30 inches of rain. Mm-hmm. With a, I guess, riverine flooding is what it was, where it just, and then the, I'm going to butcher this, I know, but the valleys and something sucked up moisture or something. Is that what you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, we were talking about orographic lifting as a concept, if you want to further
That's
research.
That's where you fold
that.
A paper up, right?
Origami. Oh. It does sound like origami, mm-hmm, doesn't it? I know, there are so many wild terms in weather. Believe me, it's crazy to attempt to study. And the thing is, as much as you try, it's really difficult to ever fully grasp the ability nature has, you know? So with each different storm, I'm always so impressed. And Peyton and I were both marveling at Milton on Monday as it was just rapidly intensifying, unlike anything we've really seen recently. So I also did some research, Tommy, because a lot of people are saying, you don't usually hear about Category 5 storms in October. You know, it's later in the season. Certainly here, we're usually feeling like we're out of the woods by September, right, once we get past that August 29th, of course. But in history, recently, and you'll remember this a little better than I do, 1998, there was Hurricane Mitch. Do you remember
that?
What
does that mean?
Well,
I
was only
Mitch.
Four.
Yes, I do. I remember Mitch. Yes,
I was only four at the time. So I don't remember that one. Do you remember it here in New Orleans, impacting New Orleans?
I do. Maybe.
Yeah?
I get the names all confused, so I don't know.
I was talking to somebody last night that said they were in law school at Loyola at the time, and there was flooding here. So that's interesting because it made landfall, I want to say, in Florida. Mm-hmm. But then we had Wilma, which everybody remembers. Again, Katrina, Rita season. That was 2005. And then Michael, which was 2018. So those are the Gulf Category 5 October storms that I researched most recently. And Michael actually made landfall on October 10th. That was in the Mexico Beach area. So that was not quite Destin 30A, but a little bit past Panama City. So that was along the panhandle, whereas
Michael was devastating.
Oh, absolutely before, devastating. Yeah. I remember watching it, you know, watching the national coverage of it and just thinking, my goodness. And one of my former coworkers was actually in the Destin area and her station was completely gone. They completely rebuilt it. Mm. So
the best ever was Zeta because at
oh
least
my
it was cool.
Yes.
After it happened.
And
you
that was
the windows open and it was nice. It was in
yeah,
late October, Halloween, I think it was
October
around,
right? 28th. I won't forget it.
So what is barometric pressure? Somebody texted that in.
It's really a very simple definition. It's just the pressure within the atmosphere of the Earth. So when you look at a big synoptic storm like this, and that just means a large scale storm, we sort of vary the different weather impacts based on the mesoscale feature, which means the scale of the storm itself. You're looking at this system as the pressure drops, intensifying. And a lot of people may not understand why that happens. But when we're looking at hurricanes, the pressure dropping means the winds pick up. And again, we talked about the categories. That's how we measure hurricanes. The hurricane hunters are flying through these systems. I don't know if a lot of people realize hurricane hunters are all meteorologists that are part of the Air Force. Mm-hmm. So it's really an incredible job because you have to go through so much additional training, obviously, to fly these planes. And yes, I would also love to do that. That is my dream. I got to see one of the aircrafts up in Biloxi at Keesler Air Force Base, which is where they fly a lot of their missions from. But they take off from different bases depending on where the storm is. And they fly those missions until just before landfall, until the storm is over land. And that's when they can no longer fly in and out of them. But they are sending drop zones into the center of the storm, and those are firing back pressure recordings and wind speed recordings. So that's how we then, as meteorologists on the ground, get our information for these updates. And, you know, there's the system of the timing and when the National Hurricane Center is issuing those updates each time as well. And they start to do some intermediate advisories as landfall is approaching. So that'll continue to happen today. But this is another one that's going to hit very late after dark and then into the overnight hours. And with Helene, you know, of course, landfall was 11 o'clock. I know Augusta was experiencing the storm by 5 a.m. on Friday morning. So you're going to see the Disney World area, Orlando, experiencing this in the overnight hours. And then Jacksonville will get it a little bit earlier tomorrow morning.
Seems like people say they always land at night. Do they or not?
Not always. I mean, Zeta, we just talked about it. Yeah. That was sort of the perfect storm, and it came through at 3 p.m. I remember Hank Allen at WGNO saying, love this storm coming through in the middle of the day, in and out of here. You know, the eyewall went right over New Orleans right. with that yeah. one. And like you said, a cold front was the reason that it was steered our direction, whereas in this situation, the cold front steered Milton away from us. So then it was cool on the backside, even though we didn't have power. And I'll never forget being so impressed by New Orleans because we didn't have power, but people were still at Galatoire's Halloween. You know, I mean, it's just New Orleans for you. And similar with the last
You're
one,
You're a New
Francine.
Orleans gal, aren't you? If you know about Galatoire's.
Yes, I do quick, love going there.
Real quick, when it comes to the rest of the season and anything else that's out there, what are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, it has been about what we were anticipating in terms of the number of storms. And you're getting these situations with Francine, with Milton, where they're developing in that Bay of Campeche area, and then they just quickly move towards land. So traditionally, by now, we're essentially out of the woods, but the Gulf is warm, and it's still hot out there right now. You know, of course, it's October, and we're
so
in the upper 80s.
So the concern now, Brooke, is not the Atlantic. The concern is stuff that in the Bay of Campeche and all that area down there that stirs up?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been looking at a little bit more recently. I think it's relatively rare that you see a storm start off of Africa's coast, cross the Atlantic, and come all the way over to us. Usually, the ones that we're watching are a little bit closer to the Yucatan or the Bay of Campeche as they start to develop and then move our way into the Gulf or across the Gulf. So I think at this point, we're probably getting close to being out of the woods. We don't even have 2 full months left of hurricane season, but just kind of got to keep our fingers crossed and keep watching.
All we can do. Thank you, Brooke Blazer. A pleasure meeting you, and thank you for the information and all that stuff.
Thank you for having me.
All right. 9:53, we'll take a break. Newell's got the governor coming on at 10 o'clock, around 10:10, right after the news. So stay tuned for that. We'll also find out what else he's got planned when we come back on WWL.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it, and we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.